Monster Man, Episode 109, Ice Lizard to Iron Cobra. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear, and as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are covering the entirety of the I chapter of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. So let's get started. Our first monster is the Ice Lizard, created by Mike Ferguson. Now this is a little mini white dragon looking monster, and like a white dragon, it can breathe out a cold breath weapon. But that's not all it can do, it can also polymorph itself into a white dragon. So it can do it for up to 2 hours, which is probably greater than the length of time you're going to fight a white dragon. So fighting this little thing is going to be really surprising if you just kind of randomly come across it. You'll be like, oh, look, it's a little ickle baby white dragon. And then pow, it's a real white dragon. Like a lot of monsters that have a weird ability, I think this is less fun as like a gotcha where like, oh, the players decide they're going to go fight a, you know, ickle babby dragon and they find themselves fighting a proper dragon, and more interesting as a mystery creature. Like, it's a dragon-themed mystery, so, you know, we know that all these areas are being attacked by this white dragon. You know, it's been seen several times, but people have been scouring the mountains and no one has been able to turn up a sign of the white dragon. And that's, of course, because there is no white dragon. There's just the Ice Lizard. Another chilly white monster with frozen breath. These are not related. They're not all by the same creator or anything like that, so I don't really know what's going on with this, but, I mean, I guess white dragons certainly are already a thing, and we've already had the Fire Drake, which is the Icklebabby red dragon, although it cannot transform into a red dragon. I mean, they're not related, other than conceptually they're both little tiny versions of a colored dragon. I've said before that I think part of the motivation behind these monsters is that, I mean, this game is called Dungeons and Dragons, and if you think of an iconic fantasy monster, the dragon is pretty close to the top of your list. I gave them pretty short shrift in the monster manual. That's not because I don't like dragons, it's because I don't like the way that the game necessarily presents them. But if you're just like a starting Dungeons and Dragons going, you know, first level wizard with one hit point, whatever, well, you're going to be seeing an awful lot of dungeons and not a whole lot of dragons. You're going to have a very high Dungeons to Dragons ratio. And that makes sense. You want to maintain the awe of dragons by having them be powerful, but at the same time, you're fighting this competing impulse where players want to encounter dragons, which is why later editions of D&D tend to have all these, like, dragon wyrmlings, you know, adult dragons, ancient dragons, etc., you know, providing dragons that are appropriate for different levels of character, which I do think robs them of some of the mystery, but particularly in earlier editions, like, the idea of, you know, you don't have to be an unstoppably powerful party to fight a dragon. Again, a sufficiently prepared party, boxing clever, can take down a dragon, you know, at solidly mid-levels. At the same time, this is also not a game where necessarily you get to those mid-levels as quickly or as reliably as you might find in later editions. So, I think people just want to interact with dragons. But for me, I think this one's a mysterious one. Like, you know, it's the question of like, well, yeah, there have been lots of white dragon sightings, but there is no white dragon. And it's a creature where you either want to trick it into using up its polymorphs or, you know, conceivably, if you're prepped for it, you can creep up on it and surprise it and take it out before it manages to get its spell off. Otherwise, you're in for a bad day. Next, we have the Eye Morph by Andrew Kay. This is a weird sort of, it's a blobby type creature, it's got a quite like science fiction-y description, but it's not the creature's natural form that's important, is that it very gradually, as you fight it, it begins to turn into you. That is to say that it begins to move toward your number of hit dice. It doesn't change its hit points, but it attacks as a creature of your hit dice, your AC, and to sort of look like you, even though it retains its own damage. So, like, it'll hit you with a sword, but it's not a real sword, it's just the Eyemorph's, like, flexible tentacle. They're kind of interesting. I feel like this is an idea I would be interested to hear from DMs who have successfully used Eyemorphs in their campaign, because I feel like this is an idea that maybe doesn't always come across in practice, because think about this. The Eyemorph is reasonably tough. It's got pretty good AC and pretty good hit points. So if against a low-level party, it's probably going to survive long enough to do its bit. It does take it several rounds. Against a higher level party, you're going to be like, weird, that thing that we killed kind of looked like it was changing shape. Wonder what that's about. The solution to this, of course, is to have a bunch of Imorphs all together, but that seems like it might be a lot of hassle to track their various changing statistics. I don't know. I am a very lazy DM. That's a well-known fact about me. I wonder if an Imorph would ever look sufficiently like you that it could kill someone and you could be blamed for it. I don't know how lifelike the appearance is. It says that it resembles its appearance. Later it does say it's exactly the same shape, but I don't know if that actually means it's an exact likeness. That would add a level of interest and complication. So I like the mechanic, but I do wonder, I mean, I kind of wonder what the Imorph's motivation is, right? Like, because a lot of the time, by transforming itself into having the HD and AC of the creature that it's fighting, it could very well be disadvantaging itself. Right? It doesn't say that it improves its HD and AC until it's equal to the party it's fighting. It could be decreasing them. Well, I mean, you know what I mean. It could be making them worse. So presumably this is not, like, a survival tactic. Nobody's going to be, like, after a couple of rounds of combat, nobody's going to be like, oh, wait a minute, my mistake, I didn't realize that you're actually me. Go about your business, weird gray blob creature. So they must have been created for some reason, but not obviously clear what. Maybe they're just sort of, like, created as training opponents for, you know, soldiers to fight or something like that, which would also make sense why they don't do very much damage. That you want to learn how to, you know, counter the attacks that you and people like you would make, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you want your, you know, evil guard soldiers to get stabbed to death. So, you know, maybe some crazy wizard created them. Or maybe they're, you know, higher dimensional entities, and this is just the strange way in which they enter our world. Like, they're not hostile for the most part, so maybe that is it. I don't know. We don't really know very much about the Imorphs. Again, they're a thing that has, like, a complicated interaction with the players, but then you just kind of have to infer what it's all for from the fact that it exists. Finally, the Iron Cobra, created by Phil Masters. First off, metal name, Iron Cobra. You know, it sounds like a kung fu film. The Iron Cobra is basically a little kind of assassin robot. I say little. It's the size of a cobra. It's, you know, a couple of feet long and snake-shaped. The illustration's a little ambiguous about that. I guess some wizards are very small, but other wizards are very far away. And it's basically like a little assassin bot. And it's kind of interesting. It has very low hit points, but a very good armor class. And it doesn't do a lot of damage, but its fangs are filled with deadly venom that you have to save or die. Although they can put other venoms in there, right? So it's sort of like the idea that, you know, that you could pop open the back of this thing's head and then, you know, you can reload it. And there's little vials of venom being put in there by whoever commands it. Iron Cobras have programmed command words, and people will pay handsomely for one if the command words are also known. And presumably that means that there are, like, scrapped Iron Cobras lying around, or Iron Cobras in museums that people think are sculptures, and so on, so, because they just don't know the command words that would activate them. Because it's a robot, it doesn't appear in infravision, which is kind of interesting. It has no body heat. I haven't really read the infravision rules in detail, so I don't know if that's true for, like, things that don't have body heat in general. Can you not see skeletons with your infravision? That's an interesting point. I wonder if it's worrying about stuff like that that led later editions of Dungeons & Dragons to replace infravision with dark sight, where it's just, like, you can see. But I like them. They're nimble. They're powerful in everything except a toe-to-toe fight, where one lucky shot will take them out. I mean, basically, yeah, they're assassin weapons. They're murder weapons rather than combat weapons. And I do like a good murder weapon. This is definitely a case where here's the victim lying on the ground with the puncture wounds in his neck, and, you know, how could anybody have got into this, like, locked room, blah, 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 blah. And I definitely like the idea that you know, someone has, like, awakened this relic of elder days. I am a sucker for that version of the fantasy universe in which the long-ago civilizations had really advanced technology. And, you know, a lot of magical artifacts are just, like, technological items that people don't quite understand. I suppose that's predictable. The Iron Cobra is pretty great. Again, I think it's a monster that doesn't work well if it's just, like, sitting in a dungeon room. And I don't think any party is going to, like, go, oh, cool, a statue of a cobra, I better pick it up and put it in my bag. You know, they'll be like, oh yeah, that bad boy's gonna come to life and bite me, I know how these things work. Maybe if it was a golden cobra. Maybe there are various ranks of them, right? Like, the Iron Cobra are merely your common or garden cobras, then you work your way up, and more exotic cobras carry more and more exotic poisons and have more and more kind of, like, deluxe features. I don't know. But definitely something that makes a good accessory for a villain. Rather than being, like, necessarily a monster in its own right, it's a great part of a bad guy's kit. And ultimately perhaps a player character who's not that scrupulous as Kit. So yeah, it's a strong contribution to a campaign. It will probably, you know, stick around even after the individual fight is over, and that's always fun. All right, so that is it for both this episode and the I chapter. Please join me next time as we talk about some little mousy ratty dudes and some other monsters in the beginning of the J chapter on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.